Hammett und Karl-Heinz Riehl 1:0 für Borussia Dortmund.
Meine Damen und Herren.
Moin, Servus and Grüezi. Welcome back to the German Football Podcast for a new episode. Sorry that it's taken a bit longer than usual, but there have been a few things in the way in the meantime. I'm your host Bob for this evening, and I'm joined by two fantastic gentlemen. One of them, George, who's had a bit going on in the past few weeks, including meeting his best friend Josco Guardiola as part of the Bundesliga media days. George, how you been doing? How have the last few weeks been?
Hi, Robert. Hi, Roy. Hello, listener. I'm well, thanks. I've had a very busy few weeks. Obviously, lucky enough for my job to get to travel around quite a lot to a few of the Bundesliga clubs, which has been occupying me for the last few weeks. They do say don't meet your heroes. Certainly wasn't the case when I met Roy Campbell and Bob Haggis for the first time. But yeah, it was a tiring few weeks. Happy to be back in Hamburg now, and I'm back in the flow of the pod.
Nice one. I'm also joined by Mr. Roy Campbell. Roy, how have you been over the past few weeks?
Mine. Sadly, not getting to visit the luxury Bundesliga stadiums that George has been visiting recently. I got to go to Heidenheim and the Brems, and I don't know if you can make that a connection or a comparison with going to Borussia Dortmund's training ground. But yeah, it's been good. Been busy watching Haasvall try to get promoted this season and other things.
Thanks very much. And on that note, we'll jump straight into the content of this week's podcast, which is a few ground-hopping trips and a bit of controversy between St. Pauli and Hansa Rostock, which probably taken away from the title of the pod. But yeah, so myself and Roy a few weeks ago had the joy of going on a ground-hopping trip again. It's something we haven't done for a long time due to the World Cup and various health ailments in the within the GFP ranks over the past few weeks.
Dropping like flies on the last legs as we head into the final leg of the season, eh?
Yeah, the saddest one to see is Colin hit by Cupid's arrow.
Can happen to any of us, eh? I'm still waiting.
And on a Friday night after work, Roy and I had the pleasure of taking the regional train from Hamburg to Lübeck to watch what some might refer to as the Lübeck Derby, but considering there were 20 fans from Phoenix Lübeck in the away end, I'm not sure it can really be considered a derby. And as most of the pub will know, and filling in for Colin, who I'm sure would have brought this fact if he was on the podcast, Phoenix Lübeck were in fact they reached the Northern German Championship in 1927, finishing third behind HSV and Holstein Kiel, which is the best result in the club's history. And yes, on the Friday evening, myself and Roy went up to Lübeck. Firstly, I don't think Lübeck's a very well known city in the UK, but would certainly recommend it for a visit for anyone who's thinking of traveling over to Northern Germany. It's a very pretty city, and was in fact one of the trading capitals of the world, and the sort of one of the biggest cities in Northern Germany in the 14th and 15th century as part of the Hanseatic Trading Corporation, or the Trading League. But that's enough.
I would counter that you don't think it's well known, as Mr. Andrew Hunter, who we went also to Lübeck this weekend, and he came in with, he'll come in later, but he came up with a nice fun fact that there's actually a letter from William Wallace of Scotland inside Lübeck somewhere as they opened up trading again after the Battle of Bannockburn, I'm sure. But I think that Lübeck might be quite well known in the UK, but just anyone's interested.
Yeah, if in case you had heard of Lübeck, and William.
That made absolutely no sense. I have no idea what you just said.
I'll cut that out. I just wanted you to say that.
There's a letter from William Wallace after the Battle of Bannockburn or something.
I think it was after Bannockburn. Well, I'll cut that out, but it's funny.
But yeah, so we managed to...
Leave that in. I think it's just a typical Royism.
Those are lovely, the nuggets that the people come to the podcast for. And so, yeah, Roy, do you want to take the story on from there?
Yeah, no, it was great. I think it was one of the ones we've been talking about for a while because Lübeck's obviously very close. And even though it was a 50-minute train journey, I think it flew in for us as well. So if you're ever in the Hamburg area, I think it would be quite an easy trip to do if you're looking to head out of the city as well and maybe look at a lower league game because at the moment they're obviously in the Regionalliga. But I think for the game, I think I was more looking forward to experiencing the Lübeck vibe in the stadium more than the game and this derby. I don't know if we just said it was a derby. I don't know if it actually would be classed as one. Like Bob said, the Phoenix Lübeck fans seemed to, you know, it was like 10% of like us was actually how many was in the Lübeck, the Phoenix Lübeck stand. So it's not, there wasn't many people there from the way in. So you wouldn't really give that derby vibe, but I've always wanted to visit to Lübeck because obviously working at Hasval, you find out that they've got a good connection with the fans and it was just one that, you know, would have been good to go visit. And Friday night games under the lights in the Papel Kurve, you just can't really beat them, can you?
Well, as it turned out, you actually can. It was quite a disappointing experience all round. The stadium under Lohmüller in Lübeck. And yeah, sorry, just to make it clear, it was in the Regionalliga Nord,
mm-hmm.
Between VfB Lübeck and Phoenix Lübeck. Yeah, and yeah, I think it was just generally a bit of a disappointing experience. Roy and I were there about 45 minutes. We were in the stand about 45 minutes before the game kicked off, thinking we'd secured a good position behind in the standing section. And about 5 minutes later, there were about five guys in camouflage jackets who came up to us and told us that we're in fact standing in their section, and they ended up roping it off. So we had to go and stand on the other side. And yeah, I think it was the Lübeck hooligans. I think we were a bit surprised because we weren't like right behind the goal. It was like quite a long way to the left. But yeah, the game itself was quite disappointing because VfB Lübeck are a long way ahead at the top of the Regionalliga Nord. It seems very likely that they're going to be promoted because Hasval second team, the only team that are within spitting distance of them, has said they don't want to be promoted. And yeah, VfB went in front in the first half, one nil up and seemed to very much sit on their laurels. And in the second half, Phoenix, who were sort of very much mid-table, ninth or tenth in the table, they improved throughout the game and managed to get the equaliser about 10 minutes before the end. Mm-hmm. And it was only at that point that VfB decided that they might give it a go trying to win the game, but didn't manage to. And yeah, I think what I didn't like is the I mean, so there were 5,000 people there for the game, which is obviously a great number for a Regionalliga game. But especially in the standing section, it seemed to be quite an aggressive atmosphere and not hugely welcoming. I think especially if you weren't a German speaker, you felt quite unwelcome. Yeah, I don't know if you have anything to add to that.
No, I think the game was not as I expected because, like you said, Lübeck are pretty much flying, and they have had a couple of these results. Because I remember the only other time I'd seen them, they were also very poor, and they ended up drawing against Hasval Svi. I know that they're very close to them in the table, but at the same time, I think Lübeck are, with some of the players they've got, they're a bit of a step ahead in that league at the moment, and they've kind of built well from the last couple of years. And then it was literally like subs changed the game for Phoenix as well. Like as soon as the Phoenix, they made two really good changes in the second half, and they basically controlled that period before you said, before they scored. And then afterwards, it was VfB were like, we're going to have to start playing. But I don't really disagree with the atmosphere. It was good to be involved in it, but also I think we said at the time, if you're not a German speaker, you might feel a bit not uneasy or unwelcome. I wouldn't say I wouldn't go, but I would just be aware of what kind of game it is. And because I think most of the thing was they were very embarrassed that that's what I took from it, that they didn't beat Phoenix Lübeck. and they kind of had this like chip on the shoulder that they are the biggest. They're obviously the biggest team in Lübeck, and this like Phoenix have kind of started to come back and come up to the Regionalliga Nord, and it's kind of like we should not be drawn with this team. So I think it was obviously the first time for me, definitely. I don't know if it's just us in general that did stay at the end to see what the fans did with the players come up to at the end. So like players come up, obviously the players come up to the curva after every game in Germany to either celebrate or to apologise basically or to give a reasoning. And that's the first time we never stayed. So I don't, that kind of tells you a lot about how the fan experience was. But yeah, I'm not saying I hated it. It just definitely wasn't one of my favourites, and it's probably quite far down the bottom as well of any experience in Germany.
Yeah. So it was nice to enjoy a groundhopping experience with Roy again. But yeah, as Roy alludes to, not very high up the list. And on that note, let's jump straight into the ratings. So what would you give? What would you give the game?
The game was I think just giving a bit of appreciation to Phoenix in the second half, maybe give it a good 5, a 5 out of 10, because it was a bit scrappy at this in the middle. The Valve goal was good, but it kind of came out of nowhere as well at some point. No one was really in the ascendancy to go and make anything happen in the game. But I did enjoy the way Phoenix were playing in the second half. They just they clearly a very good team talk. So yeah, 5 probably. What would you give that?
George, is something you wanted to add?
Obviously I wasn't there. I wasn't actually the elephant in the room is obviously I wasn't invited. No, I had a Friday night game of my own, which I would argue, having heard how this has gone so far, that you would have been better off coming to watch the Hurricanes against Haxheider, 1-1. But no, I've just been reading that VfB Lübeck are currently in quite the dispute with the Norddeutscher Fußballverband. Not sure if you've read this. The main kurve is called the Papelkurve, I believe. And there's going to be a collective ban or fans of those on the podcast for the setting off of pyro against Kickers Emden in December. Apparently, there's been quite a few issues of so-called issues from Lübeck and between Lübeck and the Verband this season, and obviously. It's always controversial when the whole stands or the whole stadium receives a punishment. So that's something to keep an eye on, actually, because I didn't realize that that this was a case, and Lübeck are kind of trying to actually counter this with legal measures in terms of to what extent they can legally be enforced in terms of. Enforce that instead of receiving a financial punishment, and obviously the fans scene are part of that legal battle going on right now. So yeah, it's an interesting what you say about not being made to feel too welcome, and they're currently having a bit of a Barney with the association. So yeah, maybe keep an eye on that.
Yeah, I think it's maybe they're trying to make an example out of them, because when you think about the Regionalliga Nord, there's not a huge amount of teams that are really well supported. If you think about when I was doing my research today, Phoenix Lübeck, their home stadium holds 1,500 people. And yeah, you think about all the small teams like Hildesheim, Emden, as you were saying, so probably not really. Well, as Roy alluded to, when they played the Haasfar second team, I mean, the Haasfar second team play at the Wolfgang Marsch Sportanlage, which is just nowhere near big enough for like the 1,000 Lübeck fans or whoever who came to the game. So
I think another point of that, and it probably alludes to what John said as well, I think what I found very strange was the curva is in like a shed. It kind of feels like it's very secluded, and I think that's more where my uncomfortableness came from. Where I felt more uncomfortable was that you kind of felt stuck in there, and I feel like if there was a big pyro display, I'd probably feel quite uncomfortable. Because there's obviously the sides, there's quite a low roof as well. So that's probably why there was a lot more into the pyrotechnics, is maybe like this coming up with more of a band than maybe than just a
collective punishment.
So a fine or things like that. So that's quite interesting. But that was one of the reasons I felt uncomfortable, was being stuck inside this like shed.
Although that was actually one of the few things that I liked about the experience is that it's a very quaint stadium, sort of in that classic lower division or old style that maybe you see more in the UK as well. I think thinking back to the home of the Eagles, Selhurst Park, where you've got just like four stands that have been built at various different times, and it's all sort of like mishmash, doesn't really fit together. Like they've got two sort of open stands, one bigger stand where it's like the VIP section and stuff, and then the where all the standing fans are. But yeah, anyway, moving on to the next rating, food and drink.
Bob, you know the answer to this. Very disappointing options for two vegetarians as us. I mean, we can't just say that the food is disappointing just because of the vegetarian
Yeah, we can.
options.
Yeah, we can.
Yes, we can. But I think the only thing on offer to us was a pretzel,
Yeah.
which was about 4 euros, I think, as well, which was quite for a big one. Like your kind of thing of 4 euros is quite pricey. Beer was just it was just Holsten, wasn't it, on tap? And you actually tried an alcohol-free beverage for the first time, which I think you didn't enjoy at all.
Not at all.
So I think I'll give a collective answer to this as a 1.5.
No, I'm as
You're
per
overriding, vetoing.
I'm vetoing the half. You can't give
Okay,
halves, but
one out of 10, very disappointed. The vendors were quite small as well, and there was only one option for the whole of what the papal curva would have been, as far as I could see, for food. So disappointing. There was a couple of firsts on show, but everything else just didn't show up. Just didn't turn up in the end. So poor
yeah.
days out. Poor days out for people who didn't
A
eat.
one is the lowest that we've ever had, is it not?
Yeah, no, I was really poor because there didn't seem like there's like this. It's one of the weirdest stadiums in Germany, as in it's got a Burger King, a McDonald's, and a KFC all round about stadium. I've never really seen that with football stadiums apart from Alloa Athletic, who've got KFC right at the doorstep. Colin will love that one. But it's yeah, it was just really poor showing from the VAR-FB.
And the final rating is atmosphere. What are you giving again?
Because like the thing is, it's hard to say because it felt so aggressive at some points. You can't say it wasn't bad. The songs were good. Like I quite enjoyed the songs, quite a variation of songs as well. Which I actually just starting to think that.
Do you remember any of them, Roy?
Sorry? Yes,
Do you remember
yes.
any of them?
I will not be singing any of them.
One of them I'd
Fair.
like to add is foul is like foul, then F and
And it
B.
was so
But
out of
like
time.
join with a drum obviously behind it, and then they sing the letters at certain points. But it seemed like they hadn't decided at one point they'd sing the letters. Like it seemed to be like some people would sing the F, and then like 2 seconds later, other people. So it wasn't very. And also another point is that there were sort of signs up saying don't use your phone. And then there was a guy who was in front of me and Roy who was like
A
on
Snapchat.
he was on Snapchat pretty much the whole game, and just like Snapchatting what seemed like three different girls. As you can see, I was very much
Not
yeah,
looking at
I was
the
very much concentrating on the game. But yeah, and messaging various girls, saying something like they were messaging him saying when's the game finishing. He was saying I can't wait to push myself on you or something. So yeah,
I'll give it a 6, Bob.
what?
6 because it wasn't bad. The songs were good, but the atmosphere was toxic towards the end. So I kind of made it go down a bit more. The Capos were not that bad either. But they did well to get the feel of the papal curva singing, because there's one at kind of in every like third of the curva. So that kind of made it a bit easier to try and get everyone involved in. I would say like 80% of the curva was singing along as we were. So yeah, I'll give it a 6 because it wasn't terrible, but it could have been better with a better atmosphere.
Yeah, so there we go. I'm unfortunately a bit of a disappointing start to the ground hopping year.
Is that our first like disappointing one?
I feel like maybe when Colin went to Cologne last year, like when he went to Cologne second team or so, there have maybe been a few
Yeah.
ones that haven't lived up to expectations before. But yeah, although as George noticed or noted in the comments, it actually wasn't the first hopping trip of the year. So we're moving on to St. Pauli. So George, yeah, you also managed to head to the Max Morlock Stadion at the end of
Yeah.
January with your crew of fellow Pauli fans.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe you want to give us a
Yeah.
few minutes on Nuremberg.
No, super gladly. I'll make it quicker than I'll make it quicker than the normal report. But yeah, this is when we kind of had earmarked for a while because obviously Hamburg to Nuremberg is really easy to get to on the train. So There was like 4,000 Pauli fans there that made the journey. I'd say, Roy's laughing, I'm not sure why. I'd say that three quarters of them came on the day, which is quite impressive given the fact that, yeah, it was a 1:30 kickoff, and it's like a 5.5 hour journey. But yeah, we got there the night before, or the day before, set ourselves in. Been to Nuremberg a few times, but yeah, good to see a little bit of the city. Very recommend it. Classic Bavarian city. Very accessible as well. If you fly to Munich, for example, or if you're in Germany, it's very well connected to by a train. Yeah, so I had a good day on the day before. Up nice and early on the Sunday. Saw a little bit more of the city, welcomed the kind of all the Pauli fans who arrived around about 9:30. And then yeah, very easy access to the stadium, which is next to the the Nazi rally grounds. So that was sobering. Not that I needed sobering, it was sobering in the sort of spiritual sense. So yeah, then headed to the game. It's pretty impressive how many fans were already there. How many Pauli fans were ready to go. The stadium is pretty well known, I would say. Obviously, very sort of historically relevant. Not only being part of the 1972 Olympics in Munich as well. I think it was the equestrian, I believe, was actually held there, funny enough. And also the 2006 World Cup stadium. One of the biggest stadiums around that part of the world. It's obviously never full at the moment, whilst Nuremberg in the second division. But it was an interesting game. At this point, Pauli had actually won an away game all season, so the expectations were fairly low. One note on the stadium, however, it is blue, which is a bit of a weird one, considering Nuremberg playing maroon, or burgundy, sort of maroon. Anyway, it doesn't matter. More kind of shade of bloody red, but the stadium is more or less blue on the outside. It was a good time. Obviously, tradition of mine is to miss every goal that goes in any football game I watch these days. So yeah, finished 1-0 to Pauli. Believe Medic scored. Can't actually remember because I missed the goal. But yeah, finished 1-0. Good times. Got the party train back to Hamburg. Great weekend. Would recommend it for sure.
Thank you very much, Roving Porter Balakrishna. So the actual topic that we want to talk about today was a game that George and Roy went to whilst I was trying my hand at making sticky toffee pudding in my flat. So that's two different things you can do on a Sunday. And it was the first visit of Hansa Rostock to St. Pauli with their fans team, because obviously they played against St. Pauli last year, but there was still 2G, 3G rules in place. So the first time the Hansa Rostock fans have visited an away game at the Milan Tor since 2009. And perhaps for a bit of background, I don't know how deep into the topic the listeners are, but Hansa Rostock and Pauli is a rivalry that developed particularly in the 1990s and early 2000s, mainly due to political differences between the fan team, Rostock traditionally being associated with the right and the far right movement, and St. Pauli with the left wing. And so you two were in one of the stands right next to the away fans, seeing Jackson Irvin, friend of the podcast, scoring the winner for St. Pauli. But as always on the GFP, we're focused more on...
I missed that goal.
But yeah, as always on the GFP, we focus more on the events off the pitch rather than on the pitch.
Because George never sees them.
Yeah, because I wouldn't have anything to talk about.
Yeah, so Roy, I don't know if you want to start with your experiences of the game, particularly, I guess, at the start of the second half.
Well, I think if I just jump in, I think it's important like it was the kind of whole story that like, doesn't start in the start of the second half. I mean, it would be a bit far-fetched to talk about the general rivalry, but I mean, if we actually spoke about the game at the start of the season, at Hansa, which Hansa won 2-0, though as then as now, we were talking about some very unsavory, disgusting banners from Hansa, which seemed to be met with little to no sort of reprimand by any stewards or fans even. Kind of similar to what we experienced on that Sunday, you know, sort of homophobic, sexist, racist, xenophobic, you know, all of them basically. And there was kind of little response. There was kind of little feeling at the time that would lead to Hansa changing or anything, and kind of it was pretty much to be expected that there'd be similar kind of provocations, as guess what you would call it, in this game. So obviously Hansa arrived. The game was at 1:30. Hansa arrived in Hamburg at 9:30. They entered the Hauptbahnhof by throwing a load of glass bottles at pretty much random people, and making an unnecessary scene, just being horrible people. And then they made their way to the stadium, and I think, Roy and I were right next to the home end. So we kind of got, well, I don't say the best view, but the closest view of what they were up to. But like you could see, like as soon as I entered the ground or entered where I was, about 40 minutes before kickoff, could straight away see that there was a lot of sunflowers in use in the away end, which is obviously kind of the main motif of the Lichtenhagen attacks in Rostock in 1992, which was, we spoke about this last time, the biggest extreme right attack in Germany since the Second World War. Building of refugees that was attacked by the neo-Nazis. And yeah, there was a big sunflower on the side of it. So pretty disgusting, to be honest, that they would they had the sunflowers there as a provocation. Had a big banner that said Lichtenhagen, as if it sort of wasn't obvious enough what they were trying to achieve there. So that was before the game. So it was, they didn't really make any secret of the fact that they're a pretty horrible bunch. But I just want to say, before the game, it was kind of obvious what was going on, and I think we kind of felt the full level of it in this well, in the start of the second half. Although the game was delayed at the start of the first half because of the pyro as well.
Yeah, and I think even like knowing that it was all going to happen, it was just you never really expected how heavy it would get towards the second half. Like you said, obviously it was pyro at the first half, but that was pretty normal as any team would do. But it was the first time I felt like I'd noticed that like you can like there's clubs that are hated and their fans are hated, but it's the first time I've actually noticed what's going on inside of an away fan base that's just like coming for they're not coming to watch their team and support their team. They're just coming to hate on this club because this club is a completely different political mindset than they do, or just and that it was really grim, to be honest, most of the game. And you ended up being distracted by it, because you would hear things and then you'd just be staring at them and there'd just be people pointing and saying, "Look what they're doing," and like, "Look at that." It was pretty like disgusting to watch and see and experience. And obviously, the biggest thing that happened with the videos were going around of what happened at the start of the second half. And I was with a friend of mine, and we both looked at each other and said, something's going to happen. You just had a feeling in the air. I don't know if you felt that, George, as well, that it just, it felt really, it felt like they were ready to do something. And all of a sudden, they're all changed. They're turning their like bomber jackets on, and they've turned them inside out. And then the whole of the car, the all of the wave block was in orange. And you were thinking, this just looks dodgy. They're not just changing for a fucking scenic view, you know, like there's something, like something's going to happen here. And then all of a sudden you heard that boom. And that was when it just kind of started. It kind of went a bit fuzzy and like a bit, lots of smoke in the air. And then it was the first time you heard it, George, that it, like a firework had been thrown into this, that like it had been thrown and it made it through. Because the netting is really thin. Like, I think it was something you mentioned to me, George, is that you go very often to that side of the stand and you would never experience anything like that. And it's just them coming in and doing that was just like, it's hard to be prepared for that, I think. But it actually started at the start of the game, and it's something I think that you missed and I had to explain to you, was that someone jumped over the side, ran to the Pali end, tried to steal a flag, and managed to run back and jump back over. And you're just thinking that if that's happened at the start of the game and it's totally allowed and a guy was allowed to jump back in and join in, you just thought the rest of the game wasn't going to go well. And but it was, honestly, it was probably the most, this, like, I've never really felt scared at a football game, but I felt a bit funny being there with all this shit coming over. And, you know, I mean, someone had a firework land in their hood, didn't they? And like,
So it did kind of like, well, I felt, there was definitely a sense of something was about to happen during the half time. A woman, I mean, like I said, St. Pauli is probably more than any kind of professional stadium in the world. You see a lot of women and children in and amongst a very active fan scene as well, which is one of the reasons why I love St. Pauli so much. And a woman turned to me during half time and said, like, is something going to happen, like, with them? And I was like, she was probably with her like 10-year-old son, and I was like, I mean, I didn't expect it would be as bad as it was. So I was like, they might set some pyre off again. But, like, I don't think there's going to be no provocation from the Pauli fans. And then, like, when that all kicked off, when it was like the most pyre I've ever seen in my life, I couldn't see people getting hit with fireworks, people getting hit with toilets that they'd, like, thrown off, that they'd ripped off the walls of the away end. I saw that woman, like, ran past me and her child, obviously, in tears, saw a lot of, younger people like crying, running for safety and stuff. Very unsavory. Doesn't belong anywhere in football. It was just kind of ruined the game. I'm very glad we won, but it was hardly an enjoyable experience.
Yeah, so I think for people, in case they haven't seen the videos, at the beginning of second half there were lots of flares that were set off and then thrown on the pitch and thrown into the home end where Roy and George were. Lots of blinkers and smoke bombs and flashbangs as well. So it wasn't just the fact that it was sort of pyro as well. And also possibly an important thing to mention is that sort of one of the important tenets of being an ultra is using pyro, but like a very big no-go is like not throwing it into like areas where people are. So it sort of went against the ultra code as well. And yeah, so George mentioned it, but yeah, the Rostock fans showed the Lichtenhagen flag, which we talked about in a previous episode in August. The Hansa fans completely destroyed the toilets in the away end, and as George mentioned, threw the ceramic from one of the toilets and hit a steward who had to be taken to hospital. They also burned a rainbow flag and produced a banner saying category CIS. And I think you mentioned you wanted to.
There's one more thing, and this was also the first time I've ever seen a real life Hitler salute.
Me too.
Which was pretty. I don't know. Shocking is already the word, but like, it's not something that you go into a football stadium expecting to see people doing that, because a lot of people would put up flags in the St. Pauli end, so like St. Pauli fans like Gegenrechts and anti-Nazi stuff, which I would not classify it as a provocation or anything. It's entirely kind of controversial to declare yourself against Nazis. But yeah, in response to that, there was Nazi salutes, and a lot of other people confirmed what I had seen as well. And it's just grim, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I've never thought I'd be going into a football stadium and singing with, 30,000 people singing Nazis Raus. So that was one of the grimmest things about it. And just one thing I noticed was, one thing I mentioned about Lübeck was kind of nice was the capo, and that we're getting people into up for the game and like trying to get atmosphere building. It was actually disgusting watching the cap, because we were quite near the front, George, and you could see the guy's face quite clearly. One of the main capos, and the smug face he had with some of the stuff they were singing, and you're just thinking, how disgusting can you be to be standing in front of that and letting, like, encouraging it and starting it? And like, it was just one of the, like, I don't know, it's just really difficult thing to see, and like, it was interesting to experience, but it's not something that I'd be like, you know, I wouldn't never want to big up that experience and say, oh, you know what, it was quite a nice, it was good to experience that. It's just, it's a hard word to describe, but it was just strange, and hopefully I'll never have to feel that weird in a football stadium ever again. And I'm sure that we're going to go into what came out after the game anyway, especially for the Hansa Rostock side as well, but hopefully there's got to be some kind of change, you'd hope.
One other thing is that a very prominent neo-Nazi called Enrico Palacek was spotted kind of quite near, well, in one of the front rows of the away end. He's been in prison multiple times for, amongst other things, attempted murder, taking place in the aforementioned riots in Lichtenhagen, attempting to burn that building down, and like, what's the word, like, being extreme right outwardly, so the fact that he's just knocking around in the away end is pretty emblematic of the crowd as it was.
And I think it shows how sort of disturbing the images were that both the Fanszene Rostock and Hansa themselves released a statement consequences for the actions that happened on Sunday. So the Fanszene Rostock said that they crossed the line and they asked all of Hansa fans to think about their actions more in future and be aware of their responsibilities to the club and the fanzine. So fanzine, it's obviously fairly, they didn't say a huge amount, but then, yeah, Hansa, the club themselves, released a sort of a longer statement on Thursday where they said there'll be a ban on displays for the rest of the season. No more group tickets for away matches, because as usually the case with ultra groups is they get a certain amount of tickets or they get a certain priority for away games. One of the things that I found quite grim is that they're paying to take 8 to 10 stewards from Rostock to every away game to make sure that the away fans behave themselves and don't destroy toilets and things like that. They're talking with the police about introducing more cameras in Oststadion. And perhaps an interesting thing that we've mentioned on the pod before is moving the away end as well. So as regular listeners to the podcast will know, the away end at Rostock is right next to the Sutras or the Rostock Ultras or one of the Rostock Ultra groups, which has definitely led to problems before, including both away games when Pauli played in the Oststadion in April and August this year. First go to George. What do you make of the consequences? Do you think they'll have any kind of effect on fan scene in Rostock?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it took the club 6 days after that game to put out a statement. I mean, pretty much any time you see any other club in the world be associated with, you know, the extreme right, violence, yeah, like setting off pyro into harm, like innocent people, etc., etc. Disturbing the peace. You pretty much all see there's a statement before that the game's over. You know what I mean? And the fact that it took them 6 days. The fan thing was, I believe, after about 4 days. It just like begs the question of like, what are you trying to count? What are you trying to like not upset here? What are you trying to counter? That if you were to stray away to condemn what's happened, that would be such an issue for you. I mean, the statement is itself pretty pathetic. Like, I mean, you've highlighted like what they plan to do. In no statement or in no kind of plan do they recognize that, you know, the Hitler salutes, the Lichtenhagen banner, the burning of a rainbow flag, that's not discussed. It's just it's kind of like they're trying to recognize that their problem is to do with pyro and breaking things, which it is, but in my eyes, the grimmer than saying off pyro, etc. It's saying off pyro into the home block. I mean, is like all the disgusting right wing stuff, which the club has been very pathetic in making any sort of even recognition towards. So yeah, I mean, there was like 2,000 fans there. They think that like the 8 stewards that they plan on paying for are going to make a difference to. Yeah, 2,000 white men, in a way. And I mean, like the game against Magdeburg is obviously going to be. I know that they've planned to make some changes with the ticket allocation and stuff, but I wouldn't be surprised if that Magdeburg game was an absolute circus, given the weight of that game being two big former East German clubs. So yeah, I think. The measures, I'd be very, very surprised if they achieved anything at all. And I find that the lack of discussion, the deeper rooted problems, the deeper rooted culture of Hansa Rostock as a club and their fans. I mean, I kind of mentioned this at the time that, you know, you get idiots everywhere. You get people with absurd views at St. Pauli, you know, heard about people. Like that at a club like Union Berlin, but the fact that it's acceptable to behave like this and to have such outward views, and no one seems to care or no one seems to realize that is absolutely ridiculous. It speaks to an issue wider than ticket allocation or an issue that 6 or 8 stewards can solve. It's a much more deep-rooted thing, which requires a lot more attention than just saying, oh yeah, we're going to sell tickets on an individual basis, etc. I mean, football fans will always find a way around that, especially when there's when a club like Hansa, I just think by not acknowledging the right-wing activity of I would go as far as say the majority of their fans, I think it's very cowardly, to put it lightly.
Okay, well, thank you very much for rounding that up very, very nicely, George. I don't think Roy and myself have anything to add to that, really.
Well, yes, I mean, it's just very annoying that it's even like, I mean, as much as we love to talk about the deeper issues in football, I just think that like this is just like, it's ridiculous that in 2023, we're talking about how it's acceptable to do Nazi salutes to a football stadium. It's acceptable to make, yeah, women and children and even people like our friend Royston uncomfortable at a football game. It's just, it's not on. And it's no place. No place in the kind of football that we want. And I think it's something we'll feel very significantly about, and it's good that we can maybe use this podcast to enlighten our friends on the island and further afield about that. So yeah.
Unfortunately, myself and Roy had a bit more of a positive experience in the past weekend. Very close friend and possibly number two fan of the podcast, Andrew Hunter, was over in Hamburg this weekend, and we've been planning it for about a month or so, and looked at the game Eintracht Braunschweig versus Arminia Bielefeld. Roy, would you like to talk us through our Sunday in Braunschweig and how we got there?
Lovingly. No, it's a good one. I think it was the one that when we knew Andrew was coming over to Hamburg, that we had to try and get something we could all try and be around at the same weekend. And unfortunately, it came in one a weekend that there wasn't much or many options. And I think that Braunschweig was the best of what I thought at the time of a bad bunch. Not that anything to do with Braunschweig or anything, I just there was a lot of traveling going to be involved, and when you've got someone who's not been to some of the games, for instance, like a Pauli game or a Kiel game, you'd have probably preferred those options. And I kind of went in with low expectations, and luckily came out with a fantastic experience. But to answer your actual question, which was how we got there and stuff like that, obviously an early Deutsche Bahn train, regional train as well. So getting the spending. I think it's worth mentioning something like price as well, because we paid, I think, 12 euros each, 13 euros each. They got us from Hamburg to Braunschweig on a 3-hour journey and back, and it paid for all the rest of the travel in Hamburg for that day, and any travel in Braunschweig for that day. So, 13 euros for a 3-hour, 6-hour journey altogether, plus any small journeys, fantastic pricing. You've got to take into account for that. And we were just very lucky there was no delays and anything. We had a very seamlessly easy Deutsche Bahn experience, which is what we all hope for in life. So early train, we left my flat about seven, just after seven anyway. And we managed to get in just before 12, wasn't it? Yeah.
11.
Just before 11, sorry, earlier than that. It was a long day for this match. But even getting in, the first thing that I noticed, which I thought was very strange, was that when you got out, when you came off the platform, there was a barrier that said "Heim und Gast," and it was either you had to go one way or the other. And I thought that was quite strange, because it wasn't really a high risk game. The tickets were actually very hard to come by. I luckily managed to use our know-how and people that we know to grab ourselves tickets, because there wasn't actually a general sale on. As far as I know, I didn't look again after we got our tickets, obviously, but there wasn't a planned general sale for this game. And I don't know if that's just to do with the distance between Arminia Bielefeld and Braunschweig, or if they looked at it like a decent game, not, but well, definitely was a high risk game, so it was interesting. So we went in the home entrance, of course, and then decided to jump into the city, walk around the city a bit with a Wolters, which was the Braunschweig beer of choice. We'd definitely recommend that. We'll get into that later with all the other reviews. But if you're kicking about Wolfsburg, oh my God, don't say that when you're talking about Braunschweig, eh? A Wolters beer was definitely woke us up that morning, let's just say. I mean, alcohol free for you, Bob. And yeah, I think what was interesting for us is we knew it was an hour's walk, but we just decided to do the walk anyway. We experienced all four seasons on this walk. But I actually fairly enjoyed it. Managed to see the Eintracht Braunschweig team bus drive by. And once we made it to the stadium, we'd asked an Eintracht Braunschweig season ticket holder where to kind of go. And there's a street just outside of where the Suurkurve is. And it was full. Lots of people drinking beers on the street, having a nice time, preparing for the game. And it was a really pleasant experience before the game, definitely. And we managed to make our way in to the stadium fairly early on.
Yeah, I think one of the things I was pleasantly surprised by was the stadium as well, because having seen it a few times on TV, similar to the Max Morlock Stadion, which we mentioned before on the pod, but there is in fact a running track in Braunschweig. Not entirely sure how often they use it for athletic meets these
Or a
days,
question, as
or equestrian, as George mentioned. But the view from the Südkurve was in fact a lot better than I thought it was going to be. You don't really notice the running track a huge amount. And I was in fact at Armenia Bielefeld's previous away game at the Volksparkstadion. And I was saying to Roy that even though there was a running track, I was probably closer to the pitch at Braunschweig than I was at Parsfeld, because it was quite a long way up in the south stand in Hamburg as well.
In the heavens.
And yeah, I was really pleasantly surprised. We were also pleasantly surprised by the fact that, or no, actually, perhaps not pleasantly surprised, we were surprised by the fact that Braunschweig found themselves 3-0 down inside the first 20 minutes. So yeah, we were in the home end right next to the ultras. My friend, who's a Braunschweig fan, has in fact informed me that the ultras have just moved. At one point, they were on the far side of the standing section. They've moved into the middle behind the goal in block 7, and we were in block 8. And yeah, the ultras also handed out a flyer, which sometimes the way at home games, something I very much enjoy, a bit of reading material from on the train home or before the game. And they did actually mention that in the previous home games, the atmosphere hadn't been as good when they conceded a few goals. And it's certainly the case this time, because they were 3-0 down inside 20 minutes. I don't think Braunschweig will be particularly keen on seeing any of the goals, but they're all pretty, all very poor defending from a Braunschweig perspective. But fortunately, although there was, well, in fact, the Braunschweig fans stopped supporting their team after the third Armani goal went in.
Even I stopped supporting them.
even
I missed the goal.
even diehard Braunschweig fan Andrew managed, I stopped supporting them as well. But Emmanuel Ferrei, who was by far the best player on the pitch, managed to get one back for Braunschweig within 2 minutes. So after 22 minutes, it was 3-1 already. Unfortunately, that I think it probably saved the day, because if maybe they would have been 3-0 down for 10, 20 minutes, then the atmosphere really would have turned possibly nasty or just very dead.
Yeah, and I can vouch for that, because I unfortunately decided after the third goal that I'm just going to jump down to the toilet. Something I never do at football matches. I've always said that I hate leaving, but I thought 3-0, they've just scored, it's not going to be anything for the next couple of minutes. And then all of a sudden, down in the toilet, you hear the crowd going, and that's the first time I've ever missed a goal. So it's a very historic moment for me in Braunschweig, which is a sad historic moment, but it's the first time I've ever missed a goal in a football stadium, which is very sad, and I'm actually quite disappointed in myself. But I also think if I didn't go down, would the goal have happened?
Exactly. So, it's one of, I'm sure most Braunschweig fans will look back at that moment as a bit of a sliding doors moment in their season. If what would happen if Roy Campbell hadn't gone to the toilet?
I did hear the chant later on in the game. Yeah, so...
And Emmanuel Ferrei managed to score his second of the game just before halftime to make it 3-2.
Have you looked it back? A beautiful goal.
I did, in fact, watch the Sportschau highlights. And yeah, in comparison to the Braunschweig goals, in comparison to the Bielefeld goals, especially the two from Ferrei in the first half from Braunschweig were very well put together and very well finished. And in the second half, Anthony Uja, who Cologne fans and Union Berlin fans will remember fondly, super sub came off the bench to draw it up 3-3. The second half wasn't quite as exciting as the first half, but it's still a very good atmosphere in the Braunschweig end. Also a big pyro display from the Bielefeld fans at the start of the second half as well. And yeah, I think that was about it as far as the game was concerned. I think something we're also surprised by is there was quite a lot of anti-Hanoi merchandise available, which three of us were a bit confused by at the start. We were sort of wondering what Braunschweig fans have against Vietnam, but it turns out that that's their name for Hanover, because they don't like speaking about their arch rivals, who they are in fact playing in their next home game in 2 weeks' time. So especially at the end of the game, the Kapo was making it clear to the players that they need to win the derby against Hanover. And I think that's also part of the reason why Bielefeld was the tickets didn't go on general sale, because Hanover have a fan friendship with Bielefeld, which then means in the eyes of German fans, your enemy is my enemy. I probably should have explained that a bit better, but yeah, because Hanover and Bielefeld are friends, Bielefeld and Braunschweig are enemies. Yes, the Bielefeld fans were possibly understandably frustrated at the end of the game. The Bielefeld players were in a circle, being talked to by now their ex-manager Daniel Schwenning, who was fired yesterday at the time of recording. But my flatmate, who is a Bielefeld fan, made the interesting point because, yeah, sorry, when the Bielefeld players then went over to the away end, the ultras and the rest of the fans told them to get lost basically and were shouting at them, and so they didn't even speak to them at all. But my flatmate made the interesting point when I got home because he's a Bielefeld fan, and the Bielefeld fans at the beginning of the game had unfurled a banner which said, "If the world is in ruins, our loyalty wouldn't waver," which perhaps is goes against with them shouting and screaming at the players when they drew 3-3, which obviously is not the best result in the world, and they were particularly poor in the second half. But you feel like they need all the support they can get at the moment, in their fight against relegation, which would be back-to-back relegations from the Bundesliga and Zweite Bundesliga, all from our trip. We can go into the ratings already because Roy likes to expand on his rating. And talking of Andrew and one of our favorite guests of the podcast and our favorite guest of the weekend, before myself and Roy give our ratings for our trip to Brunswick, we thought we'd give first dibs to Andrew. And yeah, let's head over to a very hungover Paisley now.
Good evening, GFP. It's special guest Andrew Hunter here. Freshly back from my trip to Hamburg and my trip to see Eintracht Braunschweig against Arminia Bielefeld. I don't know whether Roy and Bob have already given scores, but I'm going to go straight in with my scores for the game. So the game, Braunschweig 3-0 down, 3 each finish. So it's got to be a kind of 8 or a 9 there. I'm going to go 9 because if you go on these trips, you could see a nil-nil, and instead I got treated to 6 whole goals. So that's a 9 out of 10, even if the standard of defending was pretty poor. And then for stadium and atmosphere, I think Roy and Bob will mention this as well, but for a ground with a running track, pleasantly surprised with actually how good the view in the Braunschweig Stadium was. And actually how nice a stadium it is as well. It's quite nice old floodlights, etc. So it's a real bit of character around it compared to a lot of more modern grounds. So I think the stadium and atmosphere, and again being right beside the ultras, that's going to be an 8 score. I'm going to score everything very highly. And then food and drink, as the only non-vegetarian there, I treated myself to currywurst with some bread and a pint of lager. And so again, for me, absolutely perfect. Currywurst is exactly what you're after when you go to a German game. Well, not for Roy and Bob. So again, it's going to be an 8 for me. So a very much an all-round high-scoring trip to Braunschweig, and a very, very nice club and day out. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to hear that the Sambuca has worn off and Andrew's able to think straight.
Clean line to Paisley as well. It's not that far away.
Oh yeah. Well, the world is your oyster in Paisley.
Let's move on.
So yeah, firstly your thoughts on the game and your rating, Roy.
Thoughts on the game, because it's so up and down and because a lot of it happened in 20, the first 20 minutes, you forget how chaotic the first half was because the second half wasn't as great. I'd give it at least an 8 for entertainment, because you're seeing 6 goals. Well, I only saw 5. You're seeing a lot of goals in the game. You're seeing some really. It was, I think, like the crossing from Magnus Gechter, the young boy on loan. That's a centre half on loan from Hertha Berlin, who set up Anthony Yuja. Like just moments of brilliance got Braunschweig back into the game, and I think that was most enjoyable for me of that the game because the game didn't flow as nicely. Braunschweig did. Were more in the ascendancy towards the second half, but just couldn't really make that push through forward to go and try and win the game. Really disappointed not to win the game. Potentially, you would say so, but like I think they're probably been 3-0 down after 20 minutes. You're taking that point as soon as you get it. And Bielefeld again have just really disappointed me. I just against Hasfal, I don't really. I know you had a slightly different opinion on that. But I just wasn't impressed with them at all. Both times I've definitely watched them for the full 90 minutes, and then just even going 3-0 up. And they probably were shocked they were 3-0 up as well, to be fair. The goals were shocking. Defensive errors and goalkeeper just being very suspicious of not knowing how to be a goalkeeper because of the size of him. Although, given his credit, he made a fantastic last minute save once Okugawa came on and was running riot. Would give him his credit there, probably saved the game for them. It was a 7 I gave it at the end, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely give it a good 7. I think he gave it an 8, but
I'll give it an 8.
My reasons are fairly similar. I think for a bottom of the table, a title, or
yeah, we didn't even mention that. Yeah,
a relegation dogfight in this title Bundesliga, you definitely can't complain. With what we were served up, I'd give it a 9, a 6 goal thriller for the relatively neutral fans in Block 8. Food and drink, I reckon I'll start on this one because we were very impressed, surprisingly very impressed by the food and drink offering in Braunschweig, as Roy alluded to earlier, to vegetarians. And there were quite a lot of options for veggies. They, in fact, had a pizza stand as well, which looked very nice. As I'd already taken a pizza from Braunschweig Hauptbahnhof, I managed to go for the chips, which were crinkle cut as well. Very, very impressive. I know that Andrew was impressed by his currywurst. And perhaps more importantly, very short queues as well. So it was all served up very quickly, managed to get in and out. The beer was very nice, as Roy mentioned. Wolters, would recommend if you're in the area. Apparently the biggest brewery in Lower Saxony. And so I'm going to give the Eintracht Stadion an 8 for their food and drink.
Yeah, we'd agree. Very much enjoyed it. I think the crinkle cut crisp was a bit different. I still know the best. I said crisps, yeah. Chips, pommes. Oh my god. Yeah, I think I'd give it also a good rating. I think it was probably one of the best pommes I've had. Not the best, and I don't like to say, but we just talked about a very positive experience in Braunschweig, but their rival, well, they think their rivals, Wolfsburg, still have the best pommes in the Bundesliga and Zweite Liga, anywhere in Germany so far. Definitely this season I've had. But the pommes in Braunschweig were unreal. It wasn't just your typical thin, shitty, fried pish. Definitely your top quality pommes in Braunschweig.
And long-term fans of the pod will be happy to hear that Roy didn't have mustard with his chips.
I did not. I went for the pommes frites sauce because sometimes you've got to change it up.
And the atmosphere of the game, what are you giving that?
9. I think it's because we enjoyed it so much as well. So we felt we can join in. I mean, even Andrew tried to join in, which was nice to see with the songs. The songs were all really good. The songs were all different. Okay, some songs were similar, but they changed the tune and gave a different melody and stuff like that. That was nice. Considering that it was so... Like, I kind of missed when they stopped because I was in the toilet and I actually stopped myself. So I don't think I count the atmosphere kind of killing, like dying. The Bielefeld fans looked good. You couldn't really hear them, but when they were in the ascendancy, they looked good as well. So that was nice. And yeah, I think I'm giving it a 9. I really enjoyed it. I think that the way the stadium shaped, you could hear it very well. There was one really strange moment where a group behind us started singing, and that's just something you definitely don't associate with German football, especially when you're in the curva where the ultras are there, and that just made the ultras sing even louder and get drown that out. I think honestly, for a 3-0 draw, a basement battle, fans turned up, was just under
19,000.
Yeah, just under 20,000 for this kind of bowl stadium. I think it generated a very nice atmosphere, and I'm giving it a 9 just because I really enjoyed it. I'm not going to give it a 7 just because the atmosphere was good. I just really enjoyed the atmosphere.
Yeah, I'd very much agree with that. And in comparison to, I think it was perfect for having Andrew with us as well, and just generally, well, just a general experience, because like you mentioned, in comparison to PowerFB, we all felt quite welcome there, and Andrew, as a non-German speaker, didn't feel sort of threatened or anything.
Well, we hope not.
Well, we hope not, yeah. And yeah, we could join in when we wanted to and when we'd understood the words or got onto the words. But other than that, we didn't feel forced to or uncomfortable. So yeah, that rounds off the pod with a more wholesome experience than our trip to Lübeck. So, and I think also something I didn't really realize till I was looking at Google Maps on the way back. But I know we sort of say this about pretty much every area of Germany. But you know, sort of even in Lower Saxony, you've got lots of there are lots of teams in the area. You've got Magdeburg, well, Magdeburg isn't in Lower Saxony, but it's very close by. Magdeburg, Hanover, Wolfsburg, obviously that Roy enjoyed his time there in October, and a few other sort of lower league teams around there as well. Maybe Hildesheim. Those kind of people. So, yeah, I think Hanover is reachable by plane from a few airports in Germany. So, if you maybe see some cheap flights, then give it a go. Yeah, that's all from the GFP for this week. Hope you enjoyed the usual mix of fun, seriousness, and Royisms. We've got a few plans over the next few weeks, and we'll see when we'll next be back. Hopefully, if Conway will be able to join us next time. Hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll see you next time. Cheers.
I'm a living, hey, hey.